Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Next Fan Up. My name is Mark Sitko. I am your super fan for the Philadelphia Eagles. This is Next Fan Up, a podcast for the fans, by the fans. We have a whole bunch of different super fans for all the different teams. That gives you a more in-depth look at all these teams as we break them down. I have a couple super fans with me here today. First, I have from Chicago, Tom, our Bears super fan. How are you doing, Tom?
I am not unhappy, Mark. I'm
wonderful.
Doing pretty well, but I cannot really relax until I hear the soothing, buttery voice of our Chiefs rep.
Yes, a man who has the voice for radio. Nick, you are the Chiefs super fan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm here and I'm excited. Are you ready to get weird?
Am I right, people? That voice is amazing. Sounds awesome. You seriously could do like movie trailers. Oh, it's great. When I hear my voice, I'm so nasally. I'm like, oh, God. But you, man. Awesome. So let's get started. Let's get through these games. We're recapping week 14 in the NFL. Two games are playing right now as we speak. We'll get to them eventually, Oakland, Denver, and Dallas, Green Bay. But all the other games for this week, other than the Monday night game, are finished at this point, and we can start breaking them down. Some really big blowouts today. One big quarterback went down. It's going to have major playoff implications. Let's get to it. Starting with Thursday night, Minnesota, Arizona, probably the best, maybe the best Thursday night game of the year. Tom, you had a chance to watch this game. What did you see?
Yeah, this was a real entertaining game. Arizona kind of escaped with a 23-20 win. It came down in the last seconds, really. It was third down with seconds on the clock. Mike Zimmer is getting some criticism because he didn't just kick the field goal. Instead, he had Bridgewater drop back for one more pass, try to get him in a little bit closer, or, you know, maybe score the touchdown for the win. I personally kind of admire that kind of aggressive thinking. But it kind of burned him because Bridgewater got hit by Dwight Freeney for yet another sack and fumbled the ball away, and the game was over. And that's really too bad because Bridgewater, this was maybe the best game I saw him play all year. He was under control. He saw the field real well. I thought he read Arizona's blitzes and handled them really well. And I thought Norv Turner really put together a good game plan because they went to really short, quick passes with a lot of rollouts, which really helped. First of all, it helped him escape the Arizona blitz. Second of all, it helped compensate for what is really a miserable offensive line in Minnesota. If there's anything that's going to hold that team back, that is it. Other than that, they're reasonably solid all over the field. Adrian Peterson came out real well. He was real hot and scored the first touchdown in the game. But after that, Arizona did a pretty good job of holding him down. He only had like less than 2 yards per carry the rest of the way out. So they did a pretty good job on him, and that undoubtedly, you know, was a major contributor to the fact that they won the game. Carson Palmer looked good. He had a pair of touchdown passes that broke Kurt Warner's single season franchise record. Michael Floyd looked good. He had over 100 yards receiving. Patrick Peterson held Stephon Diggs to 12 yards receiving. Diggs has been real hot. He's been a big part of the Minnesota offense. So holding him down was a big deal. And I thought the Cardinals looked about as good as anybody you're going to find in the NFC. They're arguably the most balanced team in the NFL right now. And they're going to be scary to run into in the playoffs, I think. It's going to be a real interesting postseason with them in the mix.
Yeah, I definitely do not want to play Arizona if we make it to the postseason. We get to play Arizona next week, and we'll see how that plays out. But I'm pretty sure we're going to lose that game and then hopefully not run into them in the playoffs. We'll see how it goes. Not that I expect to go anywhere in the playoffs. The next game we're going to look at is Seattle-Baltimore. I had a chance to look at this game. This is really just two teams that are not at all on the same level. Seattle is just so much stronger than the Baltimore Ravens. Russell Wilson went 23 for 32. He had 295 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, just total domination. Baltimore can't keep up with that at all. They only had 6 points. Rawls left the game with an injury. That's probably the biggest part of this story. I'm not exactly sure what happened. Do either of you guys know? Have you guys heard any updates on Rawls' injury and how bad it is?
Yeah, it's a broken ankle. He's out for the season.
Oh, that's a shame. I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. So, Rawls is gone. That's really the biggest story of this. Moving on, Nick, you watched another game that was just a total blowout. Is there any question now who owns the NFC South, Carolina, Atlanta? What did you see in this game, Nick?
Well, there hasn't been a question who owns that division in quite a while. I think the Panthers actually clinched the first round bye with this game. They, you know, there was only one team that really showed up in this game. The Panthers won 38-0. Matt Ryan continued to look like not a real quarterback. It was really bizarre. They couldn't get the running game going on the Atlanta side either. Ended up with just 16 carries for 54 yards. And literally everything that Carolina did worked. I mean, it was really like a cat was toying with a mouse for you know, the entire course of the game. And it, to the point where Cam Newton was just goofing off throughout the game, even though he sort of got banged up towards the end of the first half. I mean, he was having extended long celebrations at the end. He was doing like a WWE sort of thing, like cupping his ear, listening to the crowd, and ran all the way to the other side of the field, like almost plowing over some old guy in a suit on the sidelines to cup his ear, listen to the other side of the stadium. So he was having fun. He's clearly the MVP this year, I think. And, you know, they were also averaging 4.4 yards per carry. Jonathan Stewart had a nice 44-yard run. And yeah, Carolina's just rolling on, and the Falcons. It just seems so bizarre that there was a period of time when the Falcons are being talked about as the best team and one of the best teams in this league. They were in that undefeated bunch, and it's just been it's an utter collapse. There's just nothing. They weren't even showing any signs of life in this game. It'll be interesting to see, you know, who or what changes going into next season.
I think there have to be firings. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have a team that had that potential fall apart this hard. And if they still believe in Matt Ryan, which I think they should, you know, you have to start building around that. You can't let that waste, you know, like he doesn't have many more years left. Not that he's getting old, but you know, it's a finite amount of time. You can't waste that. Going to be very interesting to see, but I hope a whole bunch of people get fired, and because it's a good team, they deserve better. Losing their running back early was really bad, but still, they deserve better. Tom, in your game, you guys almost beat Washington for me. Thank you for putting up a good fight. This end score 24-21. You are not totally unhappy. What did you think? What was this like?
Well, at least the Bears were competitive. Of course, you're right. Washington's in first place in the NFC East, as pathetic as that is. This was a 24-21 win for them. The Bears actually had a chance in this game to tie it up. With about a little more than a minute left, Robbie Gould had a 40-yard field goal, and it went right, wide right. This is really unusual for him. He's usually much more consistent than this, but this is the third field goal he's missed in two games. And the two last week were arguably, I mean, some would say they're the reason that the Bears lost that game. He's probably not feeling real good right now. And he's in a slump, and we could see them bring in some kickers for tryouts. You never quite know. I don't know how far he's got to slip before they start to do that, but this is kind of a serious problem. He's you know, directly responsible for, I mean, not entirely responsible, but played a big role in two defeats now in a row. Admittedly, I'm not a very good team and not a very important season, but nevertheless, you can't throw away wins when you can get them. For Washington, Kirk Cousins looked really good. He was generally real sharp, but he did a good job of reading the blitz. The Redskins did a great job of picking it up. The Bears are not a good blitzing team. That helped. But I got to tell you, you know, you hear about Kirk Cousins and the fact that he turns the ball over, and boy, you can see it. He really lives dangerously. And there was one play in particular where he just lost his mind and threw up a really stupid, you know, duck to running back Matt Jones, who under pressure, Jones caught it, but boy, it really should have been intercepted. And a turnover at that point would have been just a killer. With the score 23-20, that is just the last thing that you want to do. He much better to take the sack, and yet, you know, he lost his mind, and you can kind of see this guy is just a ticking time bomb waiting to explode, and you kind of wonder how far a guy like that can take Washington, whether he's really the future there or not. Jordan Reed is also worth mentioning. He's Washington tight end, 120 yards, one touchdown, nine receptions. Big game for him. He was a huge problem for the Bears. The linebackers are way too slow for him. The safeties and the other defensive backs were too small, and he just run them over. And he did a lot of damage today. The Redskins did a good job of stopping the Bears' running game. The one thing that's worth mentioning for the Bears, Alshon Jeffrey had a real good game, kind of a breakout for him. Yeah, 107 yards on six receptions, and he needed that. He needs some good performances down the stretch. He's going into free agency, and this will be a big game for him.
God, you make me very – that's – I can't wait. Come on, Alshon Jeffrey, be an Eagle. That would be wonderful. Just have a real receiver. Oof,
they're going to franchise him. So I can just tell you that right now. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's a perfect position to franchise. There aren't many people like Alshon Jeffrey out there. Oh, that would be great, though. You're making me – that's like, you know, Christmas dreams in my head now. Okay, moving on. Nick, you had a great game here. Unfortunately, an injury really sidelined it. But Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, two of the powerhouses of the AFC. What did you see in this game, and how bad is the Andy Dalton injury, do you think?
Well, it's really a couple of injuries. And as you said, I think that's probably the most important thing that comes out of this. I mean, although this does have other implications for both playoffs and the division, the Steelers ended up winning 33-20. It was a typical Steelers performance where both Roethlisberger and D'Angelo Williams had great games. It was a bit of a down game for Roethlisberger. I mean, he didn't throw a whole bunch of touchdowns, but at the same time, I mean, all the major players showed up. But again, they were playing against a Bengals team where Andy Dalton, their quarterback, injured his thumb on the first drive. He threw an interception at the end of his first drive, only threw eight passes, and then threw that interception. And it's not really clear where the injury occurred, at least as far as I've seen, but it's somewhere along there. He fractured the thumb on his throwing hand, and so he was out for the rest of the game. And the prognosis is still pretty unclear. Marvin Lewis after the game said that he's definitely out for next week, but can't really say beyond that. I can't believe that he'd be, gone for less than 2 weeks. I mean, it just, broken thumb on your throwing hand, that's got to be at least 2 to 3. We can go into how that's going to affect their season. But also, Tyler Eifert also went out with a concussion. So, now that we have this protocol, there's a lot of guys that have been coming back from concussions the next week. But sometimes serious ones, the Chiefs have had a couple of players that have been out for several weeks now. With concussions. So if both, Dalton and Eifert or any combination of those guys are out, a lot of the magic on this offense just doesn't really work. A.J. McCarron came in as his backup, and he had an okay game. I mean, he had some nice throws. He threw a couple of touchdowns, but also threw a couple of interceptions. And their running game just wasn't doing enough to keep pace with the Steelers overall. So if really, and if Dalton is out for a few weeks here, what they have coming up is they're going to the Niners. So, I think you can feel comfortable about these guys not being there for that game. But then they're at Denver, and then they finish the season home to the Ravens. I think on the surface you'd say they'd go 2-1 of those games anyway. But even if they were to somehow lose all three, I think they're still generally okay for the playoffs. But it's got to be worrisome, and they're definitely going to be losing their seeding as they move forward. For the Steelers, as it sits right now, they're still on the outside looking in, only because they're basically tied in terms of record with the Chiefs, and the Chiefs have the tiebreaker. I think the Jets have a higher record. The playoffs, so this is going to be something that's going to be a major storyline going forward into the playoffs, where basically both of the two presumed top seeds, top powerhouses, teams to beat in the AFC, the Patriots and the Bengals, largely through injuries, have both now really fallen down, and it's looking like the top of the AFC is very much
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. This is just heartbreaking for them, for the Bengals. It's just so reminiscent of the Carson Palmer Steelers-induced injury that happened in, I think it was 2004 or something like that, maybe 2005, 2006, that playoff run. And if he comes back, yeah, exactly. They're not going to be probably playing at home in the playoffs now. They're probably not going to have a bye. Just a huge shift based on one injury. Such a shame. We'll see how it goes. Tom, you had a chance to look at the SF Cleveland game. Nothing too crazy and exciting, right? What did you think?
Well, you don't say this very often, but Cleveland won 24-10. The story of the game, Johnny Manziel had a real good game, 21 of 31, one touchdown, displayed a good live arm, lots of mobility, and he brought a genuine spark to the offense. It didn't hurt that they basically ran over the 49ers. Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson combined for 230 yards rushing, and Cleveland pushed around the 49ers at the line of scrimmage pretty much all day. Blaine Gabbert was sacked five times. They only had 150 yards through the air. The 49ers look really lost right now. They're in pretty miserable shape. They did beat the Bears last week. That's not saying much. And frankly, neither one of those teams played very well. Apparently, you don't say this very often, but they ran into a buzzsaw against Cleveland. And Cleveland really dominated them. And this cannot be good news for Jim Tomasulo. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the 49ers in the offseason, how responsible they hold the coaching staff for this disaster. Because, you know, even though there isn't a whole lot of talent on that team, the fact that they're playing so poorly, and this really was a poor, poor game to be dominated by the Browns, that's pretty awful. You have to kind of wonder what the future holds there.
No, for sure. I mean, just totally. Unreal. I mean, I don't ever usually pick the San Francisco 49ers, but I picked them today. I thought they had a chance to play some football. They were favored. No, they can't pull it out. In another game that is similarly like a bad football bowl, a who cares bowl, was the Indianapolis-Jacksonville game. This game started out really bad, just both QBs very, very far off, not really playing good football. And then finally Bortles hits an 80-yard touchdown, and then all of a sudden it became a rout. The Jacksonville Jaguars put up 51 points. They won 51-16 in the end. There's not really much to say here. Like I said, these are two teams that are not very strong. They're not going anywhere. We don't want to spend too much time on them. But, you know, awesome for Bortles, 51 points. They blew them out. Indianapolis is in complete free fall. I do not know what's going on with that team. We shall see. Nick, you had a chance to look at San Diego KC. I was supposed to give you some trouble from Jay because you said this was going to be a complete blowout and you won by 7. What happened in this game? How did it go for you guys?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think I was talking too much, but I got a little bit annoyed just because, you know, Jay was really disputing whether or not it made sense for the line to be 10 on this game, which was, it's a big line. But I mean, and I think it goes back to a lot of people that look at things from a national perspective and don't actually watch a lot of the individual games. You know, it's, and I'm not saying that's necessarily Jay, but it's one of those things that irks me. It's like, oh, well, Phillip Rivers, better quarterback than Alex Smith. And yeah, this should be, you know, they should probably win. This should be close. Like, well, but they played 3 weeks ago and the Chiefs beat them by 30. You know, they played San Diego when they're coming off the bye in San Diego. And the Chiefs beat them 33-3. So I was, you know, like not much has changed, you know, since 3 weeks ago. I figured this was, you know, you had to be looking at a fairly lopsided win again. And it really very well could have been, but it was just extremely sloppy conditions. It was basically a torrential downpour as the game started in Kansas City. And so, you know, and the Chiefs just basically kept on making mistakes deep into drives, whether it was a whole bunch of penalties that would stop them. They had, I think they had a couple touchdowns eliminated by other penalties penalties or various things like that. They muffed a punt. They basically gave the Chargers, you know, a thousand opportunities to come back in this game. And even though the Chiefs were basically outplaying them throughout most of it, they weren't putting points on the board. And so when it came down to the end, Phillip Rivers really did have a chance to tie the game and force it into overtime. He made, you know, it was just purely Herculean you know, quarterback, the whole cliche of a quarterback putting his team on his back and driving down the field for a shot. And so then they get down to the 1 yard line. The Chiefs then jump off sides. So now to the 6 inch yard line. And the drama was pretty high and it was pretty tense for a while, because this last like 20 seconds of the game lasted probably 15 minutes in real life. Because so then, you know, they have that penalty, and then they have a delay of game, which then pushes them back to like the 5.5 yard line. And so then they threw something else and they have a false start. So they move back to the 10 yard line. And then there was a couple drops in between there. And basically Phillip Rivers was hitting guys on their hands. And it was just, no one was willing to help Phillip Rivers tie the game against the Chiefs. And the Chiefs held on 110-3. There's not, you know, much else to say from this game. Otherwise, you know, other than the Chiefs are just continue their turnaround. It's their 7th straight win. They're 8-5. They'd be in the playoffs if the season ended today. I mean, the other big stuff is Justin Houston didn't play again in this time, but his replacement, Dee Ford, who we picked up in the first round of the draft a couple of years ago, he had 3 sacks and played a generally good game. I'm still not totally sold on him because he's just a total speed rusher. He doesn't have a bull rush at all, but he was able to really cut through and make some plays. For San Diego, they showed their defense really has a lot. I really like their linebackers, but they're really just continue to be constantly discombobulated on offense, and it probably has to do with a lot of their starters being injured. But they were, you know, they had at least a couple of delay of game penalties, and they nearly had several other ones. They, in the first half, they had to use up all their timeouts, I think, by very early in the second quarter, just to save, you know, stop from getting delay of game penalties. I don't know where the breakdown's happening, whether they can't get the plays, you know, from the coach down to Rivers or what, or they're just not getting organized on the field. But I mean, in every way, this was a really messy game. I mean, the other thing is that, you know, that Alex Smith was very close to breaking the NFL record for the longest streak of pass attempts without an interception. He got up to 312, then threw a really bad deep pass and got intercepted. So we don't have to talk about that anymore in Chiefs Kingdom. And and yeah, that was pretty much the game.
I was kind of surprised this wasn't a blowout too, because when I look at San Diego's offensive line and I look at the Kansas City pass rush, I really didn't think Phillip Rivers had much of a chance to do much of anything. So I'm really surprised. I mean, I guess probably along with you, that this wasn't a blowout game. Was there something wrong with the Chiefs pass rush? Why didn't they get, you know, did they not dominate the line of scrimmage like, you know, I would have expected them to?
Well, they pretty much did. The thing is, I mean, Justin Houston not being there, the pass rush just isn't there. It's like I said, like Dee Ford will still, you know, he got 3 sacks. I mean, he still will get to the quarterback. Justin Houston, he disrupts the entire pocket. He basically collapses the pocket on his own. Whereas Dee Ford, that's not what he does. I mean, he'll knife around and he kind of like runs it wide, and occasionally he'll get all the way around and be able to get a sack. But he's not doing anything. On the plays where he doesn't get to the quarterback, he does nothing. He gets blocked. And so Rivers did have a little bit more time than I think he would have if Houston there, but he was still sacked 5 times. The main thing is this, that you know, and so again, I mean, the Chargers only had 3 points. But the main thing is that the Chiefs were really stymied. And the other thing is, as I've mentioned in weeks past, is that the Chiefs, their biggest weakness is their offensive line continues to be injured and shambles. I think they haven't, similar to the Chargers, actually, they haven't started the same group in consecutive games. And we have Ja Reed playing at right tackle, who's a guy we picked up off the street like in the middle of the week, right before week 1, because we had so many injuries. And, you know, and if you even look at the guy, I mean, the guy looks like one of us. He's not one of those big, heavy guys. I guess he has pretty good technique, but also he has to commit a lot of holding calls just to be able to, you know, just to hold on literally and then not get blown through every single time. And so, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs have a couple of spots in their offensive line where they're just not being manned by professional players. And it's the same with the Chargers. And so that was the main thing, is that the Chiefs just kept shooting themselves in the foot, having penalties in key situations, you know, and they, despite the fact they're moving up and down the field, they weren't coming away with points. So it should have been a blowout, but the Chiefs just sort of let the Chargers hang around into the end.
Tom, you look at the Detroit-St. Louis game. I was expecting Detroit to win this game. They've been playing so well. What happened? How did St. Louis pull that win out?
Yeah, the Lions front seven fell apart. That's basically what happened. The score was 21-7. Rams came out on top, and the story of the game was Todd Gurley. He ran for 140 yards. He had two touchdowns. And despite the fact that Case Keenum only threw for 124 yards for the Rams, they ran the ball for over 200 yards, and basically they just ran the Lions over. The Lions didn't have anything going on offense. The Rams, once again, dominated the line of scrimmage. Golden Tate caught two touchdown passes, and he was about all the offense that they had. Calvin Johnson was held to 16 yards. That's one catch. Aaron Donald had three sacks of Matthew Stafford, so Stafford had no chance. And basically, that was the story of the game. It was very simple. It was Todd Gurley and the Rams running backs just running right over the Lions defense up and down the field. Wow. So fairly simple in that respect in terms of the summary of the game. Two not very good teams. The Rams really, I mean, if you can talk about a team like that needing a victory, they needed this victory. That ended a five-game losing streak for them. And Jeff Fisher is trying to save his job now. I think, you know, the last time I was on, we were talking about the fact that he's going to have a heck of a time surviving in St. Louis / L.A. if this, you know, bad play continues. So this was a big game for him. I think this is how he envisioned the Rams playing from the beginning of the year. He wanted to be strong up front on both sides of the ball. He wanted to dominate the line of scrimmage. And as far as I can tell, outside of his own division, which is a pretty rough, tough division, this is the only time they've done it, where they really did what he wanted and ran the ball real strong and depended on the players at the line of scrimmage to win the ball game for him.
Well, I can't believe Fisher may keep his job. That's ridiculous. He needs to go, but we'll see what happens. I mean, just I don't understand. I checked out, obviously, the Buffalo-Philadelphia game. This game was interesting. Whole bunch of, obviously, the big story was Shady coming back and that whole fight. I do have to say, in that trade, we clearly lost. If you look at this game, Kiko Alonso, their one running touchdown, Kiko Alonso missed his spot in the hole. He was able to cut back against Kiko. It wasn't Shady. It was their other running back. But regardless, it just showed that he was not really suited. If you do that straight-up trade, Shady is the better player. There is no question. But as you know, it's more about money than anything else. Shady came back with a lot of attitude, but he was very respectful today. Before, he was talking a lot this week, but he's very respectful in the game. He didn't do very well. We pretty much bottled him up all game. He had one about 20-plus yard run that was kind of a breakout run, but that was the only play of the game, I think, that I really noticed him being anything more than a normal running back. Cox was all over him and just blowing up their offensive line all game. Watkins, similarly, had one big play right at the beginning of the game, their first touchdown, threw it over the top. He went right over Byron Maxwell and caught a touchdown, and it really scared me. It was like, oh, man, this could be all game if they just keep throwing this to this guy. But then we shut him down, and Watkins didn't do anything else for the rest of the game. He caught a couple more passes, but nothing over the top, and kind of as a nice bookend in the very final drive as they were trying to just needed a field goal to tie the game. Buffalo threw the same pass up over the top to Watkins, and it was an interception. Our safety got over this time to finish it off. If you look at these two teams, I think Buffalo – we're not better than Buffalo. I'm not saying that they're way better than us. But I think Buffalo is either the same level of us or a little bit better, but they are just so undisciplined. The number of penalties was laughable. Not only were they jumping off sides so that we would get 5 yards at least five times in the game, they also were false starting left and right. So on both sides of the ball, we just totally owned them by juking them out. We were able to just get 5 yards at will. I think by the end, they definitely had over 15 penalties. None of them were big. There was no passing interference, big penalties, so it wasn't a lot of yardage. But you just can't do that. When your offense isn't amazing, you can't do that. Their offense relies on the run game. Anybody who has to run from a first and 15 every set of downs is not going to pull it off. So that really, I think, was the biggest story. I was really pissed last week. People kept saying that the Eagles had these fluke plays that beat the Patriots, two punts and a pick six. And I hate that idea that people have that plays are fluke plays, as if all of them don't count. No, no, no. Special teams is a third of football. And if you're not putting the resources into your special teams and your special team coaches, you're stupid. That's not on us. He was acting like there was no way that wasn't Chip Kelly over Belichick in that. I say he, Patrick. We were talking about this Pats game. And no, 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 no. Those are totally great plays by the special teams. And the Eagles deserve credit for that. They had another one today. They kicked a long punt and they were able to get the punter to drop the ball on a hit and they picked it up. That, you know, these plays really matter. Special teams, I think, is just as important as the other phases. Yes, they play a little bit less, but it is a very important part of the game. We had amazing punts today that kept us in this game and always kept Buffalo at a long field, and they didn't have the offense to do it. And then one other game here. I guess we have a couple more. Nick looked at Tennessee New York Jets. What did you see in this game? Obviously, just a total blowout, like a couple other games today, but what did you see?
Yeah, I mean, these teams look like who they are. The Jets are a legitimate playoff team, and the Titans are still, you know, the bottom rungs of the NFL. One way to look at this is just simply the difference between the running games of each team. In games in which Chris Ivory really gets going, the Jets pretty much always win, and he had 22 carries for 101 yards, whereas the Titans had 24 yards of total rushing in this game on 13 carries. I mean, they just have no real running backs. On the other side, though, I mean, the Antonio Andrews, the Tennessee running back, he was the best passer on the Titans, though. He threw a 41-yard pass to Marcus Mariota for a touchdown, giving him a passer rating of 158.3. whereas Mariota was not quite as good. He wasn't bad. He's still learning, but he threw a pick. He got sacked five times. He ended up with 21 of 39 for 274 yards. But it was, you know, it was still mostly a lot of short passes. He couldn't really get it going because basically everything they do goes through Delanie Walker. And you know, he had a 51-yard pass to Harry Douglas, but basically was getting not much production out of anybody else, of his wide receivers. So yeah, I mean, that's who the Titans are. They don't have running backs and they don't really have wide receivers. Other than that, everything's fine. And the Jets, meanwhile, Ryan Fitzpatrick has been very impressive to me. I mean, he's a guy who's bounced around a lot of the QB hungry bad teams in this league. And he always gets shipped out of town because he's just not good enough. But I honestly think if you look at a lot of the places where he's been playing, those teams would be better if they would have just held on to him for a couple of seasons and given them some more weapons. Because when he gets to throw to Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker and has a decent defense, he plays extremely well. I mean, he in this game was 21 of 36 for 263 and threw three touchdowns, rather, no interceptions. He's been playing like, you know, definitely, you know, in the top half of the league among quarterbacks. I mean, I think he's just outside of the top 10 just in terms of just pure production that he's given out there. So, you know, if you can imagine, like, if he's playing at this level for the Texans, they'd be a playoff team easily. There's a lot of teams that would be a lot better with a guy like Fitzpatrick. But again, you know, there's so many of these teams, everyone now seems to want to get the new young guy who's going to be the new Cam Newton, and they want to just keep on taking lottery tickets in the draft rather than settle for a guy who will win you games, but is never going to have that sort of that chance to be, you know, on the Mount Olympus of football, I guess.
Yeah. The three quarterbacks that I think are like this year proving to be serviceable like that is Bradford. I would put in of my own Eagles. I would say if by the end of the season, if he plays all right, he could be in that same category of, yeah, not amazing, not Rodgers, but serviceable. Fitzpatrick definitely is probably leading this group. And then the other one I like is Cousins. I think Cousins has proven this year that, yeah, he can be a serviceable quarterback. I know what Tom was saying earlier, that he will all of a sudden throw crazy interceptions at the end, but he's still learning. He's getting better. Fitzpatrick does the same thing. He will throw some balls up sometimes. He's a gunslinger. Even though Fitzpatrick is kind of like more serviceable, he is a gunslinger. He will throw it up sometimes when he shouldn't. The other game I looked at was the New Orleans-Tampa Bay game. New Orleans pulled this out. They won 24-17. Totally crazy. I expected Tampa Bay because they somewhat were still in the fight, but I think this does end it now. I thought that they would push for this win here. It really was, you know, Breeze is greater than Winston. That's the story of this game. At half, these were the numbers. Breeze was 19 for 22 with 196 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Winston was Winston was 7 for 13, 70 yards, zero touchdowns, zero interceptions. There's just no comparison. It is completely on another level for Breeze. We haven't seen it much this year, but he was able to get it going today. Tampa Bay couldn't keep up. They did make a push at the end to try to win it. Their one drive they finally got going was like one of these where it was just stringing together penalties and Winston scrambles to get them down the field, where you're like, this isn't an offense. You guys need to figure out how to actually move down the field. And they will. But it's just fascinating to me where Tampa Bay can have one game where they blow somebody like the Eagles out, and then they have another game. And they have games where they compete with some of the best in the league. And then they have games like this where they go up against Rob Ryan's offense and they can only put up 17. Yeah, so surprising. I guess Rob is fired, though, right? Is Rob gone there? Is that true? Do you know that?
Yeah, he's been fired weeks now. New Orleans defense has looked worse.
Yeah. I think that happens. That's the problem. I mean, you have to fire Rob there. But, yeah, a lot of times it just falls apart at that point. We had that happen when we had Juan Castillo as our defensive coordinator, which was a huge mistake. But when they fired him and put Todd Bowles in, it wasn't the Todd Bowles of today, because he's taking somebody else's defense and trying to make it work. You know, it's really unfortunate for those backup guys. But, yeah, interesting. Nothing too exciting in this game. I think it knocks Tampa Bay out. What were you going to say, Nick?
Well, I think it's Dennis Allen who took over that defense too. And he's actually, I think, a pretty good coach. But like you said, I mean, he's got to try to insert all of these scheme adjustments and try to fix all of the bad that basically Rob Ryan installed. And you just can't really do that midseason, especially with not very good personnel. The only other thing I noticed in this game is that I that Lovie Smith afterwards, I think, uttered a new drop-worthy phrase where he summed it up by saying every area we didn't play well. Apparently not knowing that one every actually covers all of that, but
yeah. That's really disappointing, because I think that team has some talent, actually. Between Winston and Doug Martin, they've got some pieces to build around there, and Smith's a pretty good defensive coach. Wouldn't surprise me if they weren't a pretty good team next year. I guess this essentially, I wouldn't say it knocks them out of the playoffs, but, you know, this was very damaging for them this year. I don't think they could recover from that rough start they had. But it wouldn't surprise me to see the Bucs sort of emerge next year as a team that has to be dealt with.
I agree.
I feel like we've been saying that. Yeah, I think they can build around Jameis Winston. Doug Martin's a free agent, but I have a feeling they'll drag him back no matter what. But, yeah, I mean, I want to agree, but I also feel like they've been one of these teams that every single year we've been saying, this is going to be the year they turn it around, going back to the Freeman days there. I think if they at least are patient enough to not blow up this regime too quickly, then I think they have a solid chance of building on it. Because, I mean, there is a lot of talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball there, around Winston. So if they can just kind of hold things together and, you know, add some pieces here and there, they definitely have the talent to be a good team, but they've just been one of these perpetually disappointing ones.
Yeah, for sure. But I think Winston may be the key, right? But it always is, like you brought up Freeman, it's always the, who's the new quarterback, and is this the one that's going to be the savior? Winston is the best that I've seen in there in a while. I like Winston a lot. There's something in him. I didn't love him coming out of the draft. I preferred Mariota. I prefer Mariota. But there's something about the fire of Winston that is really fun to watch. And as long as he can get it just to play a little manageable and not get crazy, I think he's going to be fine. We'll see where he goes. But I like him. There's something about him I really enjoy. There's two games going on right now. We have Oakland and Denver. Oakland is up 15 to 12 on Denver. And then we have the Dallas-Green Bay game, and Dallas is trailing by 7-14. Is there anything either of you guys want to say about these games before we close off the show?
This Oakland-Denver game is really something else, because with 4 minutes left in the first half, Oakland, I'm almost positive that they had minus 14 yards of offense. And yet they've come back in the second half and made this into a game and actually pulled ahead. Denver completely dominated them in the first half, but it's been a different story the second half of the game. It's turned into a very – well, it's a defensive battle, but it's – turned into a reasonably entertaining game and a lot closer than I thought it was going to be.
No, and I'd also say, I'd say folks probably need to cool their jets a bit on the Brock Osweiler, you know, being the next Peyton Manning train. I mean, he's been playing serviceably well, and I think it's, you know, he's been thrust into it, and, you know, we shouldn't be too judgmental. But at the same time, I mean, it's been the case throughout this entire season that the defense is really winning games for this team, and he's sort of a passenger on the defense's car still. I mean, as we speak right now, I mean, he's completing a heavy percentage of his passes, but not really attempting anything deep and no touchdowns yet, whereas Carr, you know, Carr is one of those guys like we were talking about with Winston and Mariota. I mean, he's one of those guys who is the future. He's getting things done for them. It'll be really interesting to see how this shakes things up if the Broncos don't come away with it.
Mm-hmm. In the Dallas-Green Bay game, I mean, all I can really say is how crazy would it be if Dallas was able to win this. They're only down by 7. They have the ball. There's 12 minutes left. Who knows? That would be really crazy if they pulled out a win over Green Bay. We have a game later tonight.
Mike McCarthy, it's worth mentioning, Mike McCarthy took over play calling for the Packers this game in an effort to kind of switch things up. And I kind of wondered early on if it wasn't working. It was 14-0 the first half, but Green Bay stalled out now, and they look like the same Green Bay we've seen over the last month, which is very unfortunate for them. But I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm pretty sure it was not Tom Clemens' fault that they weren't performing as an offense, but maybe McCarthy thought, you know, maybe they'd get a little more confidence, maybe they'd execute a little better knowing that he was calling the plays. Hasn't really worked as far as I can tell. That didn't solve their issues. Whatever those issues may be.
Not having Nelsonitis is what I think it might be. Would definitely be a whole other thing this year if they'd had him all year. But, yeah. And also, yeah, it's been a strange year for them for sure. This happens to them a lot. They seem to be a team that just perforates isn't the right word. They kind of hangs right at the surface of being great. And with just a few pieces get removed at times, they fall below really quickly. I guess this is true probably of a lot of teams. To be great, you really have to have the right constellation, and it's hard to maintain that throughout a season. We have tonight New England and Houston. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, it does sort of make you wonder if they're just so against bringing in people in free agency. That's been the way that they've run that organization for a very long time. They're just draft and develop. And the Chiefs new GM is from that school, John Dorsey. I think the Chiefs are a deeper team than we've ever been. He's been drafting pretty well and churning the bottom of the roster and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it seems like the Packers, they always end up in the situation somehow where they lose key starters and they don't have the same kind of quality depth. They don't. And maybe if they're willing to open up the pocketbook for more than just re-signing the guys that they drafted themselves and just, you know, and actually pull in some big cogs to add to this team, that they could be a stronger franchise. It's sort of the conventional wisdom that if you can draft and develop well, then that's really the smart way to build an organization. But if when you start missing and you just refuse to bring in free agency replacements, then they now sort of remind me a bit of the last years of the Peyton Manning Colts, where they're just so top heavy in terms of their talent, and there's just not much much beyond the initial starters.
That's so funny to hear that, to think of Green Bay as this team that doesn't do free agency, because when I was a child, I learned what free agency was when Reggie White left the Eagles and went to the Packers, and I'd never heard of this thing before, and I was so hard. I can't even tell you how heartbroken and just like offended and pissed I was that, like, one, that Reggie would do that and leave. And I mean, he went on to win a Super Bowl. I eventually got it, but oh, it was heartbreaking to, like, for him to go to that team and to find that could happen, that your best players could leave and go to other teams if they wanted as a child. And I think that was right when free agency was being invented, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't know. It was definitely a sad, sad time. So it's hilarious now that they don't do it. You guys got Reggie White. That's how you won that Super Bowl. Regardless. such a great player, Reggie. So we have, like I said, tonight, New England and Houston, right? Obviously, you guys know where I'm rooting. Come on, Houston. Pull this out. Come on, Texans. J.J. Watt, why'd you break your hand? Regardless, we'll see how it goes. Tomorrow, once again, an 8-game, you know who I'm rooting for. We have the Giants and Miami. Go, Ron. Go, unsquish the fish. Let's make this happen. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on either of those games. Do you guys think there's any chance Houston can beat New England?
Oh, there's a chance. I mean, the Eagles did it.
I know. Totally, right? Yeah. That's impossible. I mean, no, exactly.
Everyone
I think they have a better chance, right? They're at least probably twice as likely, right?
I do think it's kind of funny that somebody up there must really love New England, because to have to play J.J. Watt and have him break his hand right before this game, I mean, I can't believe that God would do that. But apparently he really loves Belichick.
So and he didn't break it last week, right? It's not like he broke it during the game against the Buffalo Bills. He broke it sometime in practice? I don't know what the story is.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I just thought
I guess he'll use it like a club. We'll see.
Yeah, possibly. We shall see. That has not been working well for JPP, but we'll see how it goes. And then we'll see. Go ahead.
On the Miami Giants game, Miami's got way more talent than the Giants do, and they're wasting it down there. I've talked a lot to Ron about this, especially on Twitter, and I am really down on that coaching staff, because I think they have way more talent on that team than they're playing, and they need to show it. They're on Monday night tomorrow. They're up against a team that, in my opinion, is well coached, but who they should really beat. And it'll be interesting to see what they do there. That Giant defense is awful. And if they can't move the ball against them, there should be some people held accountable down there.
Yeah. There's something about that Miami coach. When I see him on the sideline, he looks like a fan. That's the only way I can describe it. Like, the way he reacts to the game, he's like, oh, that didn't work. And like, oh, yay, that worked. And it's just like, no, dude. Like, you look like you're reacting to the game as much as we are, rather than feeling like you're controlling it or driving it through. We'll see what happens with their coaching staff. But that you're totally right. There's a lot of talent there. I think they should definitely beat the Giants. But, you know, Coughlin and Eli and ODB know how to pull things off. I think that Miami will win. I think that the Giants' defense is one of the worst in the league. They give up a ton of points. They give up a ton of passing yards. As long as that passing game is working in Miami, they should be fine. We'll see how it goes. But, yeah, thank you so much, Tom. Thank you, Nick, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I will let you guys go now so you can check out these games and finish off, see if Oakland pulls this off and if Dallas can somehow find a way to get back in this game. You can reach us at NFU Podcast. At NFU Podcast on Twitter. For Facebook, you just want to go to Facebook and type in Next Fan Up. You will find us there. You can also email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And like I said, my name is Mark Sitko. I am your Sunday night host. On Thursday, we will be back with our Week 15 preview. Jay Soderberg, Pod Vader, hosts that show. Should be a lot of fun. We have super battles where you hear the different super fans go against each other as their games are coming up. There's a lot of exciting games coming up next week. We only have 3 more weeks of football. If your team may not make the playoffs, folks, now is the time to cherish these games. Really get into it. You know, you got to make sure that you enjoy, because like with my Eagles, this may be the end and we have to figure it out. So thank you so much. This is in honor of the greatest coach in football.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.